Hi, I'm Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendusky.
And this is Start Writing.
And this is a craft discussion differentiating characters. And so if you've been following us for a while, you'll know that there was a termination of episodes at the end of May. Those who got the newsletter were informed that we have changed the format of the podcast for at least a time here. We are cutting down to just one a month. It'll be just one craft discussion.
We were doing four a month, and that was that was a massive workload, and we decided to refocus our efforts.
We were just not putting in as much time into our writing as we wanted to, falling behind on some of our deadlines and our goals there. And if you heard the episode on Insta Freebie, it has done some incredible things for our marketing campaigns. And so we really want to try and leverage that right now to see if we can really push our careers to the next level and hopefully stop working full time. So we're cutting back on the podcast so we can spend more time writing, get a few more books finished and written. The hope is that if things go well, we will eventually bring it back to the full four episodes and whatnot. But for the time being, we're just cutting back to the one episode a month.
And it's just because we're so busy and we're bummed about it. And if you're bummed about it, let us know, because that'll help us get back to more episodes more rapidly sooner. So
it was definitely a bittersweet moment sending out that because I enjoy the podcast. I learn a lot in preparing for the episodes. It's fun to talk about this stuff with Jay and to get the emails and from everybody. But I just need more writing time at this moment. So we are cutting back, and so if you're a little confused where your episodes are gone, that's what happened. So this month, we are going to be discussing how to differentiate characters. So this is a critique I've gotten a lot. It's also a critique I've given a lot, not just in critique groups, but reading books. And it's sometimes people say there are too many characters in a scene, or I can't tell the characters apart. Like, I even remember reading the Game of Thrones, and for the longest time, I was like, I can't tell who is who. And I actually had stopped reading it for a while until the TV show came out. And I watched the TV show. And then I was like, okay, I got the characters. Yeah. And then I was able to just take off in the books. And I've stopped watching the show because I don't want things spoiled. And I know that at some point Martin, they go past Martin. And I've even heard a lot of people say, yeah, it kind of went downhill at this point. I was like, yeah, well, you're past where his story goes. And he's the great storyteller. So, but the first three or four episodes of the Game of Thrones television show helped me to recognize the characters, because I did have a hard time. And so it's a big problem in fiction if your readers can't tell your characters apart. We'll go into this a little bit more once we jump down to the discussion, but we have this month in critiques. There's some big spoilers here for the Red Rising series. If you haven't finished it and you plan to, this is from book three. But again, big spoilers here, so just be careful. And so the entire series is in first person from the main character, Darrow. And he has a really good friend named Severo. And so there's a scene in book three where Severo dies. And then we get multiple paragraphs about just the emotional impact this has on the main character. And it's in first person, so these are his thoughts, his feelings. And then two chapters later, it's revealed that this was the main character's plan all along. Severo's not really dead. He was just given a poison that would make him look dead. And
the narrator knew this?
Yeah, the narrator knew it because it was his plan. But then we have gone into his head and his feelings with this big lament. And it was just a huge violation of trust between the audience and the storyteller, because you can't go into that character's feelings and have him lamenting the death of his best friend for paragraphs, if not a page, if he knows his best friend didn't just die, right? For me, the only way that scene works is, so there's five characters in the scene, and only one of them does not know of the plan. And the only way that scene works the way he plays it out is if you're in the character who doesn't know, and they're making assumptions about what other people are thinking and feeling. Right? That's the only way that scene works, because otherwise, if you go into those people's heads, their fear and emotion is not about the death of their friend. Their fear and emotion is that they're not playing it off, that it's not going to work.
Yeah.
That the person who's supposed to believe all of this might not believe them.
I feel like another route maybe to fix that would be to lamp it so the narrator would need to later confess that he was lying to trick the reader. And I'm guessing he doesn't interact with the reader that much, but I think that he should admit, this is why I just made all those false emotions to you, reader, because I was trying to trick you, reader. Like, I feel like
that... Yeah, but he does, there's not a conversation between the reader. It's written in first person present as though you're watching it go...
Oh, yeah, what the heck?
So, yeah, it was, I mean, it was just a huge violation of the trust between the storyteller and the reader, and I was frustrated in the moment. I was like, you can't go on for a page about how terrible this is if you know it's not real. But I very much enjoyed the Red Rising series, and I do recommend it. But I was very frustrated with that moment. Okay, so here we're going to talk about three techniques to differentiate your characters. And why it's important that your readers don't confuse them. So the techniques we're going to talk about is... how to remember names, cursing and profanity and dialogue. So I've been reading the book. I'm not going to mention it because this is a pretty harsh critique of the book. But I have the hardest time telling the characters apart. Like, sometimes you'll have two characters in a scene. I can't tell who's who half the time, right? Just everything is just so similar. And the reason this is important is that as we're tracking the motivations of the characters and their progress or setbacks towards those goals, that's what creates suspense and tension in the scene. But if you can't differentiate those characters, you can't track that. And so it kills all of that suspense and tension because you don't actually know who is making progress because you've got, you're getting your characters confused.
Matt, I run into this in a lot of books where I'm confused by who's who. But someone who does it really well is J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
Like, her characters... People who read her books can usually name like 20 characters, which is incredible. Most books, you're lucky if you can name three.
Yeah, and so I was actually, this episode is based on an episode of Writing Excuses. That's kind of weird to say.
Excellent.
But I was listening to them, and they had covered this concept like in 2 minutes. But in that 2 minutes, there were so many great ideas. I was like, these need to be explored more, because they're brilliant ideas. So I want to talk more in depth about them. So if you listen to Writing Excuses, you'll hear me pull their examples, and then I'll extrapolate them.
Yeah, this is not 15 minutes, because we are that smart.
Okay, so the first thing that happened was Mary had mentioned that she had taken a class on helping her remember people's names, and she tried to use some of those techniques to help readers remember their names. So I was looking up these techniques, and they're basically three basic techniques to help you remember people's names, and we're going to talk about them. One is alliteration, two is feature exaggeration, and three is just a larger neural network. So she had mentioned with alliteration, Monty with the mustache, right? To help you remember that. And it's a little trick there. The thing is, if you write that in your book, Monty with the Mustache, it sounds a little silly and funny. So what you want, unless you're writing something, you know, very YA that's kind of comical or funny, what you want is not to tell the reader Monty with the Mustache. You want the reader to make that up on their own. The reader says, oh, Monty with the Mustache, in their head. And so you kind of want to trick them into this kind of connection to help them remember the character and their defining traits. Okay. So.
I thought of Moaning Myrtle.
Moaning Myrtle, yeah. Well, she was writing YA, and there's definitely some comical aspects to Harry Potter. So let's take Monty with the Mustache. So we say Monty sat at the table, flicking the mug with his hand repeatedly. His mustache. And so what I've done is it does almost both sentence is Monty Mustache. But I've broken it up with a description in between the two. And so the goal there is to get the reader to connect Monty and Mustache on their own instead of me saying Monty with the Mustache because it has that silly feel to it. Right? So that's the first step, is generating some kind of alliteration. And now you kind of have to look at this. This is kind of like a big connected web we're building, and it will make all sense what it is then. So the second is we want to then take a feature exaggeration. Say, take one of their noticeable features and exaggerate it a little bit to help you remember them. And in writing, we don't really need to exaggerate a feature. What you can do is just spend more time describing it. So in episodes in the past, we've talked about essence theory. It's kind of that same idea here. Or when we talk about setting, we talk about landscape and centerpiece. So this then becomes the one part of their features that you really talk about. You know, you could say he's 5'10", blonde hair. And then I'm going to spend like a whole paragraph talking about his mustache. And so that, not only is that connected by the alliteration, but it also then becomes the featured aspect of them. So it then becomes a much more connected piece of them. And so finally, for larger neural networks, basically the more information you have about something, the easier it is to remember. And so we're going to then work in information about his character, his personality, his preferences, his outlook, any kind of thing like that, or maybe even his job, right? April, who wears earrings, is a jeweler, right? So we're going to weave that into this as well. So we've alliterated to connect the name with the feature. We have spent a full paragraph describing that feature. And now we've used that feature to explore aspects of his character to build that larger neural network. So the reason I have a
larger neural network is, I love that phrasing, but it's really just getting to know the character, right?
That's sort of like
having a conversation.
That's a psychology term, and that is that the more information you have about a person, the more parts of your brain it touches, which then makes that neural network larger. And so any one of those connected pieces can stimulate the whole memory.
Okay.
So it's a neuropsychology term that we're talking about there. Okay. So then what we do now is we come back to our paragraph, right? So we start with his mustache curled at the tips with the wax he put in it. The stuff was so expensive, he had to fast for an entire day each month to afford it. But Monty felt fashion was worth sacrifice. For all the superficialness of clothes and hairstyle, his approach made it feel less so, but his mustache still looked ridiculous. And so there, we talked about the mustache. That bigger paragraph makes it that exaggerated feature. But we talk about who he is and how that has manifested that. And so now you have an idea of what that looks like and who he is. And it's all connected in this very tight web to make sure you can remember who Monty is. He wears that mustache. It cost him a lot to do it, but it means a lot to him.
And still looks ridiculous.
Yeah. All right. So that is using the techniques of remembering names, which is alliteration, feature exaggeration, and larger neural networks, to help your reader differentiate a character. Okay. The second thing we're going to talk about, and again, they cover this really briefly in Writing Excuses, is using your profanity, your cursing, and your swearing. And so if you look at your characters, you can then essentially kind of assign them a type of profanity that they will use and they won't vary from. So you can have one character. So we mentioned in another episode where profanity and cursing comes from. It's derived from sex, religion, excrement, and then you have colloquial phrases, right? And so these are kind of the core from which they are derived. And so then you can have characters who stick with specific types because it helps just with the differentiation. So you have one that will only use profanity that references sexuality. And then you can even expand on that. And maybe they tend to be just fairly visceral and crude in their language in general, right? And maybe they're very aggressive in their sexual advances towards people they're interested in. And so it all kind of connects that way. And you don't have to expand it that way with a character. You can just say, I'm going to limit this character to this kind of profanity because it helps differentiate them. And then with religion, you have general religious profanity versus specific, like by Abraham's beard. It's a very specific one. Or like if you hear somebody say, heck, right? These kind of niche profanities are a combination of almost a colloquialism with a religious aspect to it and can even further, you know, differentiate that character from someone else. Of course, then we have excrement. And again, you can kind of build on that in the character. Maybe they tend to comment on just bodily functions in general, you know, always talking about people farting and different things like that. Just kind of expanding that choice in profanity. Now, and then of course you have colloquial, which can if all your characters are colloquial, I think it was going to come across as a little odd. But now and again, it can be very effective. So if we take the term BS, you can say that's a load of BS versus that's a load of crap, which is kind of that it's got that ideological perspective on it, people avoiding raw profanity. And then you can say that's a load of hogwash. And hogwash, you can almost immediately tell where this person's coming from in their background, right? Like hogwash is very rural in its reference there. And so you can see how that colloquial one kind of pulls out some of the character. But again, if one character's all colloquial, one's all excrement, one's all religion, then the minute we hear them use any kind of profanity, we immediately know who's talking. So, any your thoughts on that?
I have some general thoughts. I think I'll save them till okay. I'll save them for a sec.
Okay, and so then the last aspect to really work and differentiate your character is dialogue. So there's a few tricks we can tell you, but I think the best way to do this is you take out all your tags, you take out all your action beats, so there's nothing that identifies who's what saying a line of dialogue, and then you read through and see if you can tell who's speaking based on what they say. And if you can't, then you need to work to develop those differentiations better. The technique I learned was really just through working with an audio narrator, and he said, pick an actor in a specific role.
Yeah, I love this
and
tip.
Then out of this, he would create that character's voice. But for you as dialogue, you can do the same thing. You pick an actor in a specific role, dig up a bunch of YouTube clips, and I actually compile them together so I can just watch it in a string about 3 to 5 minutes, and you get kind of a feel for that character's dialogue. And then, again, you implement that and pull out all the tags and beats and see if you can tell who's saying what. And so to kind of break this down, this comes down to sometimes word choice, general sentence length, how often they interrupt themselves or if they wander off on tangents or constantly telling personal stories. These are little things that can kind of differentiate them from each other. I think the actor in a role is a great method to try and develop a unique character voice as far as dialogue is concerned.
So let me add a couple thoughts. One, I first just want to admit that I don't know if I'm particularly good at writing distinct dialogue. I think my character voices sometimes blur a little. And I say that because I'm about to compliment myself, which is my readers are always really good at remembering characters. So I think, well, I figured something out. And I just want to offer two tricks that I think have really been valuable to me. And one is just cut the cast ruthlessly. Like try not to have superfluous characters that are on screen. I guess I think of it almost like a stage performance. And I just try to get by with, hey, our cast is only this big, and we don't want to have so-and-so switching costumes too often. So let's limit the characters. And on my first novel, there was a character, well, two characters that in the final draft became a single character. And it was because a single person could perform both of those roles. Mm-hmm. And that actually is a peripheral character in a way, but he became one of the most memorable because of the way those roles were combined.
That's nice.
Anyway, and then the other tip...
That reminds me, like, I remember reading something that was talking about Seinfeld. And the character, like, in fact, I think most of the characters in Seinfeld were never based on one guy. They were always based on, like, three or four different people that he knew.
Yeah.
And so he pulled them all into one to make a really strong, definitive character.
Right. Yeah, and super memorable.
Instead of having four guys kind of like George, he combined all of them to make a definitive George.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love it. So another thing that I think is really important is I try to do really slow introductions. And what I mean is we're going to take chapter one and we're really just going to get one character, if possible. The truth is I didn't do this in my latest novel, but I still believe in the theory. And that's you just have one character that your reader is getting to know. And once the reader like has a really solid hold on who that is, then you put the next character in there. And if you do it one at a time like that, and you make sure that they're like certified, they know who this person is before moving on to the next person, I feel like that has been a major factor in why my readers just like, that's one of the questions that I ask my beta readers. I just, and it always surprises them. They're like, oh, I didn't know there's going to be a quiz, but I say,
I didn't know there's going to be a quiz.
I say, how many, I want you to name every character you can think of. And every time it surprises me because they name all these characters. I'm like, how do you do that? I can usually only remember like three characters when I read a book. Anyway, and that's what I attribute it to is that really slow introductions. But.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Leave us a review and let your friends know about us if you enjoy the show. If you are interested in episodes on a specific topic, or if you like a certain type of episode that we do, let us know. As I said, our plan going forward is mostly going to be just craft episodes. But if you really enjoy the grammar or marketing, let us know and maybe we'll still work some of those in. And thanks for listening.
This is Joe Bondosky. I apologize for the rough cut of this episode. We went through, we did all the editing, and then the file was corrupted. We did it a second time, it was corrupted, and so we just had to re-download our audio software and just do a bunch of updates just to get things working again. And at that point, we were just really frustrated with the whole process and kind of want to wash our hands of it. One thing I did want to cover is that a while back, Justin Swap sent me his blurb when we were inviting people to send them in. And I wanted to go over the blurbs. The only two I'm going to read are his original blurb and then the final blurb. So he sent it to me. I made some changes. I sent it back to him. He made some changes. And then I'll talk about what we did with him and what the reactions were. And so his book is it's a middle grade fantasy. It's called The Magic Shop. And here is the blurb. The original. Marcus and his twin sister Ellie live in the loft above their grandparents' magic shop, the one all the rumors are about. He's all too familiar with hand buzzers, card tricks, and fake vomit kits. He thought he had seen it all until he stumbles upon his grandfather's hiding something in a secret room behind the family tapestry. Now Marcus and Ellie must unravel a dirty laundry list of family secrets and are thrown into a sinister world that has been hidden from them their entire lives. Not only is the family business a front, but Marcus has developed his powers before the Dunbar find him and assimilate the magic he was born to protect. How will Marcus evade his enemies and save his family? It all comes down to what's hidden in the magic shop. So then he sent me kind of a description about the book so I could kind of go from there. I made some changes to the blurbs. One of the big ones I wanted to do was focus on a single character instead of two, Ellie and Marcus. And since there was a reference specifically to Marcus developing powers later on, I pulled Ellie and kept Marcus of the two. So I sent it back to Justin. Justin made his own edits, and I felt that the final blurb was the strongest of the three. I did mention a concern that we may have cut the blurb a little bit too much. It was really tight, but at the same time, we may have overdone it. So here is our final blurb. Have you ever seen real magic? Could you tell the difference between the real version and the counterfeit? What would you do if you sold the only real magic you'd ever seen? Fake magic is all Marcus has ever known. Hand buzzers and card tricks. Until he accidentally stumbles on his grandparents' secret room, where the real magic is hidden. Unsure about the truth, he sells one of his most powerful artifacts to someone sinister. And they are coming back for Marcus. Now he must find a way to protect his family and himself. And then we have a few quotes here. My favorite YA novel since the Graveyard Book. There's so many twists and turns that I just can't put it down. Buy the magic shop to learn the difference between real magic and fake. It could save your life. So I still really like our blurb. So then we had Justin, he posted this up in the 20 books to 50K group for blurbs and covers, and he got some feedback on the two different blurbs, and it turned out that people still preferred the original blurb to the one that we came up with. But I would like your opinions as well. I encourage Justin to test it with his AMS ads to see if he noticed a difference there. And I have not heard back from him since then. But yeah, like I said, I'd love to hear your own thoughts on those two blurbs and see what you think as well. Just the more feedback, the better. And thanks for listening.